Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Home in on end-of-season savings on bedding, curtains, wallpapers and more. In-store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is our text number, as always, and Joe at rte.ie. Now, David Lamb has contacted us. David, this is an awful situation that's befallen you. How much your pickpocket, how much did they steal?
Over 5,000. I had it, it was around about the 9th of July, and I had it to buy a musical instrument. I was getting a sort of a collector's item musical instrument. Flute for just for playing every day with, you know. I walk around Temple Bar there doing the gigs around there, I was on my way from the bank. I was just walking down the quays, and I was standing opposite the Apony Bridge on the north side there, and I just found a sharp lift out of my pocket and it was gone, you know.
And was there a big crowd around, David, or?
Yeah, it was packed, Joe. It was packed. It was hundreds and hundreds of people, and I just took my hand off it for 2 seconds. That's it, you know.
And they don't
hand back in.
Yeah, pickpockets, as we know, don't act alone. So there was two or three of them.
Oh, there was definitely a gang. There was definitely a gang of them, you know. There was definitely 4 or 5 of them involved.
And did you see, after you've been pickpocketed, did you see any unusual movement? No, gone.
I couldn't figure out anything. It was early in the morning too, like, you know, it was around 10:30 or so.
Wow.
You know, sharp, you know, that time of the day you'd be sharp too, like, and I didn't see a thing, you know.
And do you think they knew you had money, or?
Having a clue, Joe. Having a clue. I mean, I walked out of Bank of Ireland on O'Connell Street there, so probably they could have been watching me coming from there, you know.
Because that's where you got the cash for the purchase.
Yeah. So.
What were you hoping to buy, David?
Well, the reason I had the money, I had it in cash, was because it was meant for a dealer coming from England, and I was going to meet him at a festival, and he's an older fella, like, so he wouldn't take anything only cash, you know. So that's why it was in cash. Like, normally I'd never ever carry cash on me over €200, but it was just. It was just for a particular purpose, you know. I was going straight home as well, like, you know, I wasn't going to mess about, you know. It was just badly caught, like, these thieves, like.
I wonder, did
they? The reason I'm on here is because I just wanted to highlight the city centre and what it's becoming, like, you know, what sort of an element it's taken in, like.
Well, yeah, as you say, you work in the city centre. What is it becoming?
Well, I think it's gone downhill. Like, I mean, I lived in Dublin 20 years ago, and there was never any danger. There was never any. You never felt threatened, or you felt safe. I mean, you know, even, you know, pickpocketing. But there's musical instruments going missing all the time around Dublin city centre. There's 3 instruments stolen in the last month. You know, there's opportunists out there all the time, and I know there always has been opportunists, but it just has been. It's just been. Exasperated in the last few years for some particular reason. I can't understand why. It's just seems that there's a rougher element there, and that's all I'm saying.
And David, where are the musical instruments being stolen from? From pubs or on the street or grabbed?
Yeah, there was a lad in one of the city centre pubs the other day. He left it at his foot and he looked around and it was gone, you know. He got it back. He got his instrument back. Now, some other musicians spotted that it was found up in the north somewhere, but there's other people. I mean, you know, that's only in the last few months. Like, I'm just saying, you know, the reason I'm ringing is just to highlight to people just to be very careful of your stuff around Dublin. Like, it's just, I mean, my whole summer's, you know, I play music, like, you know, we're not well paid, we're average paid, and that money was going for an instrument that I've been wishing for years, you know, and it was going to go on, and, you know, then somebody after me would have had that instrument too.
What make a flute is it, David? Not that I know much.
Oh, it was it's a Rudland Rose. Rudland Rose is top. It's a top quality instrument. Like, I mean, for traditional Irish flute players. It's an English-made antique flute, and it's just got a particular tone. And, of course. You know, it sounds really nice. You know, Matt Malloy and these other, you know, high-profile players, they play them. You know, so Rudland Rose.
Stay with us, David, because you happen at Halfpenny Bridge, just at Merchant's Arch. Is that right? Am I right there?
The other side of the Merchant's Arch.
Over at the women's sit the statue of the over at what used to be the Water Mills, which is Mary Street, Liffey Street. Yeah, I know. Stay there, David. Let's go back over the Halfpenny Bridge and around the corner to Fleet Street Car Park. And remember, from August 25th, unless I read it wrong, the new traffic changes. I was going to say lunacy, but the new traffic changes in Dublin will mean that end of Temple's Bar, when you're not allowed to proceed up the quays, you have to go around Westmoreland Street into Blair Street, and then you have to swing right into Fleet Street, and then you swing left into Fleet Street, and then you swing right down this little alleyway to get onto the quays. But anyway, there's a car park there if you've come off Blair Street, you swing left into Fleet Street, and then you swing left again down the lane. It's called Fleet Street Car Park. Anne O'Flaherty, Anne, good afternoon.
Yes, hi Joe, how are you?
What happened?
I was going in there on Tuesday night, 8 o'clock, with two other girls, and we went down that little lane, and we could see at the end of it the shutters of the car park were down.
Okay.
So a car was coming up towards us, and there was a woman in it, and we said to her, is it closed? And she said, no. She said, go down, get out of your car, press the buzzer, and get back into your car as quick as possible, and they'll open it. Now, at this stage, we could see a few people down in that. It's like a little cul-de-sac.
It is a cul-de-sac,
See a few people there, and we kind of went down slowly, and as we got nearer, we could see they were openly doing drugs. They were out of their minds, living a pretty miserable existence. Anyway, there was no way we were getting out of the car. Like, they were just standing around. So we did a U-turn and came back up. But really disturbing. Like, we went up then to off Dame Street, and we found a car park there and left the car there. And then, like, when we were walking back at about 11 o'clock, like, it was like a ghost town. Nobody around. If you got into any sort of trouble, you're on your own. No guards around. Like, we're only around the corner from Pierce Street Station. Went up to the car park. No personnel there that we could see. And the machine downstairs wasn't working. We went upstairs. We're standing around. Like, you're sitting ducks, really.
Okay, is the entrance to the car park also, sometimes it's not, is it also the exit from the car park?
I don't know, because we didn't go in. I don't know. Now, afterwards, the next day, I was still kind of, I was a bit shocked by it all, but I looked up the car park, and there are historical reviews from a year ago saying exactly this. You know, how unsafe people felt down there. You know, it just really, I would never, ever drive into town again. I don't know whether I'd go into town again. Like, it was just, wasn't a pleasant experience at all. You know, you feel under threat. I must say, when we were going back to the car, you're on high alert. You're kind of watching around to see who's around and is there danger. You know, it's just unpleasant, and I felt sorry for tourists, like what they must think of Dublin's fair city, because it really was a horrible experience.
And the woman who said to you, jump out of your car quickly, run over quickly, jump back into your car, was she was driving back up the lane, was she?
I don't know where she was coming from, but I think she was kind of trying to give us a bit of a heads up that there was danger ahead, and thankfully she did, because at least we knew, you know, we were a bit on alert then when we went down. But I don't know who's responsible. Is it the car park that should be putting more security in there, charging everybody? It's expensive enough as it is, but maybe charge everybody else a couple of bob. I would pay it if there was going to be proper security there, but I certainly wouldn't advise anybody to go down that lane. You know, it was horrible.
Dublin City Council would say you shouldn't be bringing your car into town anyway. They want you to use public transport.
Yeah, but then close down all the car parks. Don't. Yeah. And that's, you know, it's nonsense saying don't drive in. Like, I have a right to drive in to the capital city and feel safe. And I did not feel safe.
And then, but I know the car park up in Calabrua Street, where the shutters do be down. But when you drive in, the weight of your car automatically opens the gates. That didn't happen. That seems to be a much.
No,
more...
this woman said you have to press get out and press the buzzer.
Yeah.
And when we were doing the 3-point turn that turned into about an 8-point turn, the shutter didn't go up. Like, we were there for a while trying to manoeuvre our way out. Didn't go up. Definitely not.
Okay. Say with us, Anne Mary. Where are you suffering? As they say, where are you suffering?
Hey, I actually live in Grand Canal, but I'm actually from Ringsend.
In Dublin, so, Grand Canal, near the Borgash.
I literally grew up in the flats in Ringsend. My whole entire family is from Ringsend. Like, I've lived here my whole entire life. But, like, what's recently going on, like, I'm actually nervous speaking to you at the moment because I've had so many run-ins with these gangs, and they're not teenagers. I know that's their age, but imagine if these were men going around doing the exact same thing. And I know they're fireworks, but imagine if that was, like, it's a lethal weapon. And these gang is literally going around threatening to murder people, literally with these fireworks, pointing at kids. Like, they know where I live. And it's so scary. Like, I'm actually nervous in my own home. I'm nervous to walk outside because I know they know who is going out and who's not. And I've had many dealings with them, like, shouting at them. They were actually in my apartment complex several times. And I've chased them out, whatever, like, and other people have chased them out. We've called the guards, we've called the management company, and I've sent, like, emails to Lord Mayor. Like, I'm nervous talking to you now, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if that was men going around fireworks, like, something would have been done. The guards, if, like, you rang the guards saying, oh, there's a group of men firing fireworks at kids in Grand Canal, like, they'd be down like a shot, but because they're underage, the guards can't do anything, and the kids know it. Like, they've threatened me, they've, like, got fire extinguishers, they've come into the apartment complex with fire extinguishers, like, put it all across the hall, and they've thrown stuff at me, the language out of them, they have absolutely no respect. And it's like, what are you supposed to do? Like, I live here, I, like, pay my mortgage, I pay my taxes, I do everything right. And they just feel they can do whatever, and nothing's been done. And they know nothing's been done.
And you say if grown men did it, what are they doing? It's more than fireworks, isn't it? You say they're breaking into our homes, threatening to kill us, using fire extinguishers, throwing stones, breaking doors, and terrorising the local spar shop.
Yeah. Oh, I've not. They've literally broken in the front door of spar shop. They've literally broke that off the hinges because they know nothing's going to be done. They know, like, but if you were to say to the guards, there's a group of men going around doing all of this stuff, something would have been done. But because they're underage, what can they do?
And what do the spar shop do? If I'm thinking of the correct one, it's there. Mm. It's the big spar opposite Borgash End, down from the Marker Hotel. It's a new name on it now, I think. But down from the Marker Hotel. Is that correct?
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, you ring the guards. What happens?
When several incidents happened, like, I did ring the guards, and I just called it. I didn't call 999, but I called Pier Street Guard Station, and they're like, oh, yeah, like, you have to come in and make a report. So then I actually
Mary, this came up yesterday, again, when people ring the Gardaí, and it came up last week. It's coming up too often now for my liking, that people are getting very different responses. When they either present at a Garda station in reception, they're left standing there for half an hour. Sometimes the treatment is brilliant. I'm hearing too many stories of people being treated rudely or not being dealt with at all in a Garda station, told to sit down and wait, or told that to come back later, or there seems to be... Anyway, you're saying when you ring the guards, they don't even bother coming.
Yeah, I didn't want to call 999 because obviously
of course,
it wasn't
fair
that.
Play, yeah.
So I called Pier Street Guard Station.
Okay.
And they were like, oh yeah, grand, we'll take a note, whatever. But then when I left my home, I seen the group again and I was really nervous. like extremely nervous because I'm in public, like they could do anything, which they have done, you've seen with fireworks. And I was by myself, I was going to meet a friend, and I was really nervous. And my friend's like, just call the guards again. So I did call the guards and I said, look, I'm in fear for my life because these know who I am because I literally shouted them. They were in my apartment complex. And then the guards put me onto dispatch and they're like, we'll send someone down. I was around the area. So I seen an hour later, it was the same day that they broke the spar shop doors. An hour later, they went down to spar. And I didn't get a call back. Not once did I get a call back. I've called several times to the guard station. No one's coming back. But yeah, as soon as the spar door gets broken, the guards go down. Like, department complexes around here have videotapes. So we have videotapes of them doing this. I have videotapes. I've recorded them. I have their faces. I've messaged community groups in Pier Street. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're from Pier Street, but I think so. Just with the rumours going around, I've messaged people and no one's doing anything. And it's like, it's not fair. Like, and I'm not saying it's the parents' fault 100% at all. Yeah. Because parents might know what the kids are doing.
Okay. And Mary, how do they get into your complex? Is it a gate?
They sneak in behind people. It's around here. There's either a code or just fobs. And they sneak in behind people. Then they're kind of locked because they can't get back out.
And how do they get back out?
Sometimes they could set off the fire alarm. And if they set off the fire alarm, it opens all the gates for emergency situations.
Yeah. That sounds like a nightmare.
But like, this isn't right. Like, we...
And along you living in those... along you living in those apartments in Grand Canal Dock?
Since 2009.
15 years.
Yeah, and before that, I lived in the flats in England. So, like, I'm a local, so I won't take shit off them, like, do you know what I mean? But I'll shout back just as much as I guess. Yeah. Like, I don't care. But the fact that they're like, oh, don't touch me, like, I'm underage. And then they're like, I'm going to come back and go and fucking kill, excuse me, I'm going to kill you. I think that's extremely scary, like, especially because they know where we live. They know, like, it's so scary. Like, imagine if the next step is literally a child or someone who's going to get seriously injured or actually killed. Literally, like, it could have easily happened with fireworks. A child could have been killed. And if that was a man, something would have been done. But because they're underage, like, the guards don't care. And I'm sure some of them aren't underage. I'm sure some of them are, like, 18.
Yeah.
And it's a group. It's a filing group that's threatening to kill people.
Well, the guard,
and at the end of the day,
I take your point about underage, but I think there should be a law. If somebody is suspected at that age of doing, the first thing you do is confiscate their mobile phones. Get their mobile phones off them for forensic examination, obviously. But they'll panic in an hour if their mobile phones are gone. But then that's just a little aside. But Mary, yesterday, Harry Crosby, who lives down there for years and years and years, born and reared in the docks and knows everyone and has been in and out. He said he's scared of his life now in the last couple of years.
I was walking by Crosby's on Thursday night and there's a gang of them outside Crosby's and they actually closed the front door. Like, I have, like, drinks in there and I was literally walking by. I seen a group of them outside and I actually said, do you know what, I'm not actually going there for a drink because they're hanging around the side. It's affecting the businesses around here. Yeah. It's not fair to us doing the right thing and they literally don't care.
Okay, has it stopped you going out?
Yeah, like I'm nervous to go out. And the fact they know they can get in. So this is my home, do you know what I mean? And the fact that you can no longer feel safe in your own home or to even walk outside your front door because they're literally kids being little shits.
Okay.
But you don't know what they're going to do. You don't know if they have fireworks. You don't know if they have weapons, like.
And have you presented?
And they're not scared.
Have you presented your? We're told the spar down there at Grand Canal Dock are scared out of their lives to talk.
Yeah.
Now that says a lot, doesn't it? My God.
Exactly.
But anyway, Mary, have you ever presented yourself at Pier Street Garda Station?
I've rang them several times. The mansion company has given them video. They have videos. They have their faces. They know exactly who they are. And I haven't had a call back from guard station. Like, no joke, it's probably been at least 3 or 4 times I've called them. And I was told by a management company they gave them the CCTV. I've given CCTV of their faces. Like, I'm not going to publish it online. I could easily do that.
Well, it's illegal. You'd be the one that the GDPR would be.
But I don't know if they're the under 18 or 18. But I could easily post off their faces. You know, I could easily go on any of the social medias, post their pictures, post their faces, and say, here, will someone deal with them?
Okay, I'm just going through. It's been pointed out to me. Mary, you know the point you're making about fireworks and people?
Yeah.
And this was on yesterday. A 20-year-old Galway student has spoken of the devastating and life-changing injuries inflicted upon her by an illegal firework in Galway's Eyre Square just over a year ago. Katie Marnell from Knocknacara lost the sight in her left eye after being struck in the face while waiting at a bus stop with friends. Alex Bourne, 23, from Dundrum in Dublin, was jailed for 18 months for assault causing serious harm. In a victim impact statement, this just backs up what you're saying. Miss Marnell said she's still haunted by the memories of that night, lying on the ground in excruciating pain and screaming for help as red sparks rained down on her. She said her life has changed drastically because of this firework into the face. Deliberately, obviously, your man got 18 months. At least it wasn't a suspended sentence. Like,
well, imagine
These past 2 years, she said, have been devastating. It's a challenge every day to get up and get through the day. It's been very, very difficult. That's a young woman, a young 20-year-old student studying, and her life such a devastating impact. And as you say, when you ring the Gardaí and you said, I feel my life is in danger, your wake and your funeral, God forbid, would have taken place before the Gardaí arrived. David Lamb, did you go to the guards?
I did indeed, Joe. Yeah, I started at Pierce Street. They directed me towards Store Street, and I had a mini breakdown in the Garda station. I was just gutted, devastated.
You went to Pierce Street. Were you dealt with promptly?
They had to say
to you was, go to Store Street.
Yeah, that's all I had to say. I went to Store Street, hung about, as the lady was saying there. There were lanes of people, but got to them eventually, and I had a bit of a, you know, I told him all about what happened, and he was dead on. But I have to say, Joe, there was no attempt made by the guards to investigate the incident. And
when you said you had a mini breakdown, what, you got upset, David, did you?
Of course I did.
Yeah, €5,000. You need to earn 5,000. You need to earn 10,000 with the tax rates before you'll have 5,000 in your pocket after your walk. My God.
100%, Joe. I mean, like, you know, it takes a long time to make that.
And when you got upset, what was the reaction of the? Did you get upset in the pub?
He was empathetic towards me. He was grand. You know,
my point is, if, because I know someone who did get upset in a Garda reception, and she was told to step outside. She thought she was being brought into an office, and she's brought into the car park.
Right.
And when you got upset, were you brought into an office to compose yourself?
Not at all. So look at it. That's not the point.
I'm
not worried about, you know, they're busy people. Like, that's, I'm not annoyed about that. I'm annoyed about them not investigating or doing anything. Never got one call, never got a crime number, didn't get anything in the post. They said they were going to investigate CCTV. They have done absolutely zero for me. Zero. And I have respect for the guards.
Yeah,
you know,
if
a guard stopped me for tax, I'd be done to the world with a guard. You know, I mean, look at the guards are the best, you know, but in this case, they've done absolutely nothing for me. Nothing. So it's been since the 9th of July now, so we're halfway through August, so you know, I've given up on the guards. Like, you know, I know they're not going to help me, and I know I'm not going to get the money back now at this stage. So I've started a GoFundMe to, you know, for anybody who's interested in donating towards me getting this flute. You know, that's the only thing I can do to come back from this, you know.
And what did you say to me? You were away for a few years and you came back to Dublin and you noticed how different. Where were you? Did you emigrate for a period, or were you just?
Oh, well, I worked as a teacher in England for a number of years. I worked with special needs kids, and then I worked in secondary school.
But you said to me earlier that Dublin has changed, and obviously now you're savagely affected. €5,000 pickpocketed.
I've got to the point now, and I'm seriously thinking of leaving Dublin. Like, you know, there's no point in working for nothing. And, you know, and it's not just the theft. Like, I mean, Dublin's gone to the dogs as regards, you know, antisocial behaviour, and the public order is just not there. With you know, there's no public order. It's just they think they can do anything. Young people are just running wild, you know. But you know, I suppose in any city you get an element of that anyway. But I never thought it would be in Dublin, and you know, in a very cultured and lovely city, like, you know. But it's there, all right.
Okay.
And it's increasing.
Stay with us, David. I'll give out those details if you wish. Michael Waters, Michael.
Hello, Joe. How's it going?
5156. You were there when the fireworks were being lashed off and aimed at people.
Yeah, we were waiting to go in there into Forecast Theatre, and it was happened to be that Daniel O'Donnell was playing on the night.
Okay.
And the point at that was, I was there. We were sitting on a bench prior to going in, having an ice cream, and we were sitting on a bench close to the water edge, and within 30 foot from us, these four lads, and I seen them there carrying on, first and foremost. And I could see them, I could identify them at one stage. But then I seen them, and they proceeded to put their balaclavas on their faces. And one of them turned around. Now I know the conversation that was there, which I wanted to really emphasise, was like we all sort of know fireworks and sparklers and things like that. Yeah. This guy produced it was like circular, like Smarties tubes, four of them in a row, that size, and the diameter of them was at least around 50 millimetres, and he set it off, and he
what you're saying is, with a tube, and those, for it means you can aim the firework.
He held it in his hand.
My
he was
God.
Well able to hold it in his hand, and he was able to direct it, and he directed it.
Then you light it, and it shoots out of the barrel, so to speak, out of the gun barrel.
He and they were intimidating to the extremes. Now, we were sitting beside it, and the first one went off, and I'm telling you, it wasn't a bang, it was an explosion. And the place, and there was the reason I went into where Daniel O'Donnell was on that night, but the audience that attend that there, there were people in their average 60s, 70s, whatever, and they were shook from the ground. People just ran and ran and ran. And he didn't just stop and do it once. He was the arrogance was overwhelming to see that he'd done it. And then he decided then to swing around to his left over to Milano's over on the street there, where there was people sitting outside, and he shot two of them directly at them. Now we went into a restaurant there right beside where Harry Crosby lives,
and them
old buildings there, and I was looking out the window, and there was a couple of kids there, and I thought, innocent fun, jumping up, they were in their wetsuits, they were getting up onto the roof, doing a bit of damage to the gutters, I seen. So be it. I thought they were getting onto the roof to jump in the far side and into the river. And then they proceeded to there was two gas flues, chimneys on it there, and they just in the madness decided that they would start destroying them. So I went out when I was in the restaurant, I came out to them, and I had words with them, and I said, "You not just have the fun that you're having carrying all that vandalism out. Can you not get on?" And they just attacked, they're like hyenas at me.
But David, and fair play to you for checking them. That, and I think you're putting your life in your hands. But can you not have fun without using a weapon that could take someone's eye out, as happened in Galway recently? You're saying they're aiming them directly at people across in the restaurant, the Milano's restaurant or whatever it was.
Blatantly. And then when they were finished, the whole episode, when they were at the King, they just brazenly walked up the streets, demasked them themselves, and they went over to Boland's Mills and headed over towards Rings Ringsend. That's and brazenly sort of left it there. And everybody at this stage came back out of the shops. People ran into the shops. And the people couldn't get into the theatre quick enough. And people were terrified. Now, I would have been able to sort of sum up, but I was so taken back by it. Now, I was livid. And I would be a character that would go over and dress them. And I was with family, and I just decided, no, I'm not going to. It was horrific. And it's beyond. There's no word strong enough to describe them lads. It's just animal instinct. You know what I mean? You just couldn't. And it's out there, and it's shocking. Like, you know, it's just. And that happens all the time. You go into town, and town is not really a safe place for people to go to. You can't go for a quiet night out, and you've got that running around. You know, there's a different breed, and it's terrible to say. I'm from Dublin, and I'm shocked. And we all knew well able to have fun and things like that, but I've never seen it. It's just. You know,
this aiming the fireworks is so dangerous. Marie, I know people have been saying this for years. Do the parents, how do you do?
Joe, listen, somebody has to take responsibility. Who brought them into the world? The parents did. If the guards would go to a complaint and they can identify them or they catch them in the act, grab them by the scruff of the neck. None of this, their civil rights and all that crap. That is crap.
Well, you
because
see,
it would
yeah,
be done to
Mary,
you or I.
Yeah, Mary, but that's...
Hold on.
That doesn't get you anywhere.
Put them
I'm
into
sorry.
The squad car and bring them home. Put them into the squad car and bring them home and say to the parents, I've just caught him throwing fireworks. Where did you get the money to buy them? Mm-hmm. Fireworks don't come cheap, Joe.
The mother say, I don't know. But I know where he got the money.
They should know,
but they don't. They say, I don't know, Marie.
Yeah, but the thing is, they're the ones that give them the pocket money, Joe.
Well, it's not pocket money. It's robbed money. It's robbed
money. Well, they should discipline them. They're their children. They're their responsibility up to the age of 18, and that's an end to it. You take responsibility, or we will do you instead.
Well, that, you see...
We will lock you up.
Yeah, you're getting nowhere.
Hold on, Joe, the threat of it. Some people would take us if you threatened them like that. That's what the guards are there for. I mean, at the end of the day... What about our civil rights? We have every right. That poor man now that's been talking about down at the border.
I agree.
I often go there. It's absolutely
simple. You see,
but
why can't... Okay, that whole thing of make the parents responsible going on for decades, since I was a probation officer 35 years ago. But hang on, it's legally impossible. There will be so many court cases challenging by every organisation, challenging human rights, civil, all that carry on. But we now live in a world. One simple thing, I think, is if a guard suspects anyone, regardless of their age, of being involved in a crime, suspects the Garda on the spot has a right to confiscate their mobile phone. That's the first thing you have the right to do. Confiscate their mobile phone and tell them if they want it back, you can have it back in after 5 days when we had a good look at it, down in Pearce, and come down and collect it with your parents or whatever. That mobile phone didn't exist 40 years. They are powerless without their mobile phones. They are armless without their... But I take a point, Marie. People are always looking for ideas, and there's no new ideas coming up from the Department of Justice on how to deal with this. You'd be told...
No, because none of them are touched.
Yeah, but
they're all living in...
Yeah, but yeah, okay.
They're all living away from death. They live in a different
Marie,
world.
What's your own experience?
I haven't had it, thank God, but I'm listening to the programme all day yesterday. I mean, I listen to it all the time, but I was listening to it yesterday and
today.
It's
definitely...
This is just... I mean, Joe, I'm in the elderly age bracket, and I wouldn't go into town if you paid me. I might go during the day for an hour, but I wouldn't. At night time, are you having a laugh? No, absolutely not.
Well, I love going down to the Borough because I love theatre.
But I would be half scared now to go down there. I mean, you'd want to be getting a bloody taxi down and a taxi home. Do you know what I mean? Like, to feel in any way safe.
Yeah,
I mean, use public transport. What a flaming joke. I mean, if you have to get off the bus and walk, then, you know, to the theatre, you know, and then you come up against this in your journey. I mean, in the name of God, we have a right to walk the streets.
Yeah, but I'm saying, please, I can't disabuse you of your own experience and knowledge, but we shouldn't give in to these thugs. We really shouldn't.
You know what they should do? Is killed.
I know, I know. Someone gets their eye, as happened to that poor woman down, that poor Karen down, got her eye taken out, literally blinded. Blinded.
That's bloody disgraceful. And you know what they should take from them? Those bloody electric scooters and the bikes. If the guards can take their mobile phones, take them as well and make them walk home. Because I'll tell you, where are they getting them from?
Yeah.
I mean, they are 10 a penny now.
Okay.
And they have all the rights. They are flying up and down on the paths and everything else, and they can knock you flying.
Well, there's new legislation brought in two months ago
now. That's a load of...
But there's no one enforcing it. Okay, Marie,
exactly.
mind yourself, Marie. Mary, David Lamb. What's the name of your GoFundMe page, David? We can't endorse the GoFundMe page. People will look at it and make their own judgment. Given your situation, tell us how people find it.
Just Flute Needed David Lamb. That's it.
Okay.
Just go to GoFundMe and you'll find it there.
And what a beautiful, beautiful skill you have. What a beautiful
skill. Look at how the people love it. And
what age,
you know, it's great.
What age were you when you started playing?
Oh, just a child. And I've been out of my lifetime, and it's opened so many doors for me, and you know, people have loved it.
And who would you admire as a flautist?
Oh, so there's loads of them. I suppose James Galway, Matt Malloy.
Yeah, we're gifted. We're gifted.
Oh, we're a great nation. We've got a lot going but if we could just get that tidied up,
You're a very fair man, David. Thanks indeed. That's David Lamb and Mary and Marie and Michael and Anne about that bizarre situation at the Fleet Street car park. By the way, as from August 25th, if you're in... I use the phrase family motorist, but Phoenix Magazine seemed to get very upset that I used the phrase family motorist. That upset them awful. Sorry for them. Driving up the Keys, if you're coming up the Keys, Bore Quay, and you want to keep going up to Euston Station and you are in your car, you won't be able to from August 25th, from next week. You'll have to take a sharp left turn into the Lear Street, go round into Westmoreland Street, but then there's no left turn onto Aston Quay. So I don't know where you go. You just keep going up O'Connell. I don't know where you go. And if people start going into Fleet Street to get onto the Quays, that is a recipe for road deaths. It really is. Joe, of pedestrians, by the way. Joe at rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie. Neil Gerard Fox. Neil, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good. We mentioned this ad last Thursday because it was their big campaign down at Electric Picnic, the RSA.
Right.
And basically, it is keep your independence. Don't lose your license, lose your independence. And now there's a TV ad, which people, I don't think many people have seen. Do you want to tell us, talk us through the TV ad?
I suppose you have to really watch it to kind of get the grasp of it. It's short, and I think it's only gone out today, so that's why a lot of people, it's very much on Twitter and online, but it's probably not hit everybody yet. The idea, I suppose, or they're targeting, or meant to be targeting, like drink and drug driving, as far as I understand. So instead of showing the effects of it to, say, the victims, instead the slant is to show inconvenience, inverted commas, to drivers who might be, found guilty, or, of that, or, get penalty points or whatever, and their license lose their license for a period of time. But if you watch it, it's a very juvenile and kind of a comedy sort of vibe to it, which I think is very inappropriate.
So it begins just I watched it on your suggestion earlier on when you mentioned it. It begins with a young fella, and he shouts down to his Ma, I'm going to the match. And she says, have you got a lift? And next we see her physically carrying him to the match. In other words, he's a board and he's dependent on his mother because he doesn't have, we presume, a license. He doesn't have a car, but he doesn't have a license. And then he rings his mate and says, are we going, whatever. And then, yeah, I'll come round and give you a lift. And then the next thing is we see his mate giving him a jockey back down the road to wherever they're going. And then there's another, he rings his mother to say, I'm finished. And she says, you want a lift? And we see her carrying her home. It's meant to be funny, isn't it?
It is meant to be funny. And look, they will say, the RSA will most likely say, as I read the blurb like on it, and they will say that their target audience, I assume, is based basically younger people. But I think it's dumbing down, for one thing. But there's a few things I'll just say before we get into it on it. Like, on the fact it's, you know, you've probably seen commentary online, and a lot of it is focusing on, we'll say, that it's belittling people who cycle or walk or don't drive. They might drive, but they don't currently drive or they don't have a license. You know, people with disabilities, I'm seeing a lot of people upset over it, that they say it's quite ableist language. And, you know, on that end, I get it and I agree with all of those things. But I suppose as a road safety advocate and somebody who has supported the RSA for years and would be very much involved with them, so it's not like an axe to grind, but I want the RSA to work, but I want it to work properly and save lives and protect road users, all road users, not just drivers. I suppose the point there is that it's an affront, really, to victims, people who have been killed or injured on the roads by, drug or drink driving offences. And it's also, in my view, like the RSA is meant to educate. There's nothing educational about this ad. I know others will say that, look, it's aimed at telling people not to drink and drive, basically, especially, well, I'm being told it's more aimed at young people.
The consequences are that you lose your license, and the consequences they're saying are that you lose your independence. But that's...
Yeah, exactly. But obviously people, like, we're trying to encourage active travel, so we've all that side of it. But I suppose just before I go into that bit, but just on the road safety element, which is my concern, is that it's not educating people on why not to drink and drive, or the statistics, if you want to call them statistics, but the numbers of people who have been injured and killed in some cases. And it's also...
Clarity's sake, you are speaking tragically with experience of a close relative, your sister, being killed on the road. But anyway, on our bike.
That's right, yeah, Donna Fox is killed. But now, not just to be clear, not the drink or drugs involved, just to be clear
on
that one.
She was on our bike, I clear here.
But it is from a personal perspective, I suppose. Yeah. So the impact on people, on victims and families on that, should be taken into consideration. And I think, like, if we look back a few years, like, the RSA have had excellent advertising campaigns in the past, and like it, and they work because the numbers were reducing until the last couple of years. You know, but I think what should be the focus of the ads should be deterrence, not just talking about inconveniences and that burdens, like that, oh gosh, it's such a burden for you to not have a driver's license, but you might have killed somebody or badly injured.
Yeah, but I take those points, when I mentioned the whole thing about cars the other day, people say, and I'm talking about driving through Dublin, a lot of people mightn't have any choice. Down the country, people are much more dependent on cars than in the city centre. When I mentioned to Mary there a few minutes ago about public transport, she laughed at me. Here is the RSA ad, and obviously it's on radio, but here is the TV version.
I'm off the train, man.
How are you getting yourself there?
Liam's giving me a lift. Shall we?
And there's Neil carrying him on his shoulder.
Back to yours?
I've a bit of an early start, so...
This is him talking to chatting up a woman. And he says, are we going back to your place? And then next she's carrying him on her shoulder. Phil.
Put the foot down, man.
And that's his mother carrying him home. Can we play it again and I'll explain it as we go along, please?
I'm off the train, man.
How are you getting yourself there?
Liam's giving me a lift.
Now see Liam giving him a jockey back down the road. Okay? Lovely music. This is a fella outside a picture house talking to a young woman.
Start, so.
he's trying to get off her. She's at an early start. And can we go back to yours? And next she's carrying him back to hers. Because he hasn't got a car, obviously.
Put down, man.
Maybe she hasn't got a car, because the whole thing is that the drink driving, then the mother is carrying him, and he's saying, put the foot down, man. That's the ad. Niamh, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
This RSA ad, brand new ad, it's their new campaign, Lose Your Licence, Lose Your Independence. Go ahead, Niamh.
So, I'm a young woman with a disability. I use a wheelchair.
Okay.
I'm a disability activist. And when I saw this advert, I was very, I've thought about the word, but disappointed, let's go with. I mean, ableism is so prevalent in society, and to see this ad that kind of perpetuates this idea that I often have about myself, you know, because I do use a wheelchair, I don't have a license, I'm unable to drive, so I have to ask my parents for a lift here and there, and then because of the state of public transport in this country, you know, some buses aren't even accessible to wheelchair users. Wheelchair users have to call 24 hours in advance to some trains. So I do rely on Lyft. And then for a government-affiliated organisation to label that, i.e. people like me, as a burden.
Ah, okay.
It was very disappointing and upsetting to me.
That's the key word. That's the key, isn't it?
Really,
the key word is, Niamh, you're saying that people without a car are a burden on others. That is the whole thinking of it. And you're saying, you're not a burden. This is, we are where we are. It's a burden on people. I know this whole thing, we've done it so many times. Railway station, the lift's been broken, Niamh, as you know. You have to ring some train station. You have to give them a day's warning, a day's notice that you need the ramp to get on the train or whatever. Sometimes you're organised to get the ramp onto the Dart and the ramp never turns up or whatever. Now, okay, I'll do the RSA response because they won't come on to Liveline. They come on to programmes where there's no one talking to them. The people that pay their wages. But anyway, they would say, I'm making this up, Niamh, but I know what they'll say. I've read so many statements at this stage from them. I recite them in my sleep. They'll say, we're targeting young men especially because of the stats show that young men are more often caught drink driving, drug driving as it is now, and also the fatalities among young men in road traffic accidents are much greater than fatalities of any other demographic or gender. That's their point, and the way they feel to get to them is to make a laugh of it, Niamh.
Can I come in briefly just on that?
Neil, yeah, Neil. Okay.
Sorry.
Let Niamh answer because I directed it directly. I'll come back to you and say, go, Niamh, what do you think? They're saying it's a particular demographic, it's not aimed at you, and we're trying to be funny.
Yeah, I mean, it's very obvious. There's a problem with young male drivers driving dangerously on the roads, but then when they put out an ad campaign like this, you have to remember that nearly a quarter of Ireland's population identifies as having some sort of disability. So in targeting that specific group of young male drivers, they're completely alienating a quarter of the population from their ad campaign.
So they should be proofing their ads, not just for spellings and sequence, but they should be proofing their ads about who might this ad offend? Who might this advert offend? Are upset. Okay, let me bring...
They're really
yeah. Okay, Neil, come in. Neil, Gerard Fox. Neil.
Yeah, just in relation to their response there, like, I suppose the first thing is, what is funny about drink or drug driving? What is, like, what's entertaining about it? And just on relation to direct relation, I suppose, to what they're saying there, it's quite worrying that they're that out of touch. Despite, because if you just recall, Joe, I think it was in April this year, 30, possibly 32 or 34, I forget the exact number, I know it was over 30, organisations around the country, road safety organisations, mostly active travel, mostly cycling and pedestrian representatives, I should add, have all voted, or not voted, but have all said that they'd no confidence in the RSA. And now I know there's been a review, and we won't go into that just right now, but I know that's going on, but that's separate. And I think that the fact that there has been so many complaints about their attitude towards non-motorists and that they would come out with that, but also just like, what's funny about it, as I said? Like, I just want to make clear, like, I'm not one, I've been called a snowflake and things like that since I made the comment online. But, like, I'm not like that at all. It's not some sort of a woke argument here. And I agree with Niamh. I'm delighted Niamh came on to discuss the disabled end of it. But I suppose it's just trivialising the whole matter. Like, what is educational about that video? There's nothing educational about that video or clip. And also, I just say, I think Niamh there alluded to it in yourself. Like, how on earth did that get through PR or get through to be commissioned? It's beyond belief. Because recently there has been the other campaign. Like, I suppose I was saying to the researcher there that, like, it's not like this is not something I take lightly to come on air and complain about the RSA in particular, because they have been supported in the past, and I've great time for some of the employees there and that.
Okay.
But I think that like if we put road safety first, we expect we don't expect. Like, the pros should outweigh the cons if they're bringing out an advertisement. Obviously, not everyone likes every advertisement. For example, I didn't really like the e-scooter ad, for example, recently. Mm. I thought it was very juvenile and
okay.
that. But that was just my opinion. But this is a bit different because
okay.
this is othering people. Yeah.
Okay. Say what it's joe@rt.ie. 51551 is the text number.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
I mentioned earlier ringing the Gardaí. Someone said that they rang the Garda traffic watch phone number, okay, which was heavily advertised. Oh, again, ring it if you spot any mad driving or whatever. And it's gone. There it is, gone. The Garda traffic watch phone number is gone. So you won't be treated anyway, when you ring, get through, because you won't get through. And they've replaced it with what? With what? With an online form. An online form, okay. The old online forms. Where is Mary Sinnott? I know you're involved in the Irish Cycling Campaign. So,
Hiya, Joe, I am, yeah. I'm also involved in a local group in Waterford called Waterford Bike Users Group, and we advocate for safe cycling and safety for pedestrians and other.
Yeah.
We do consider people like me of wheelchair users and disabled people who want to get around safely on the road. Yeah.
Well, the RSA would say so do we. But your point is, Mary?
Yeah, so just looking at the ad, like my first response was, my God, this isn't a funny topic like Niamh has mentioned. And it's very difficult, actually, relatively, to have your licence revoked.
Oh, is it?
Temporarily or for a long period of time. And we've got over, in the period, in the last couple of years, there's over 21,000 licences that were disqualified, but not all of them are turned in. So there are a lot of people driving around without, you know, who aren't allowed to drive. And the whole topic isn't funny because, as you know, the fatalities are going up. And one of the most dangerous things you'll do is to step out of your door and go onto a road, whether you're driving or walking or cycling. So the topic isn't really funny, and humour is powerful, but it isn't a funny topic. And as Niamh
this is their argument. Like, I think the best ad on television, I think it's on radio as well, at the moment is accounts and accountability. It's for the toll roads, and it's based on the chain. It's brilliantly, it's very funny, but that's about paying tolls, not about life and death. Where I'm hearing from Niamh, from Mary, from yourself, is that this issue is about life and death, and to try and add humour into it is tone deaf or tasteless or counterproductive.
Yeah, I think it's maybe it's the kind of wrong type of humour, because it makes like it makes the topic very frivolous, and it isn't, yeah. because a lot of people, either they okay. aren't able to drive, they've chosen not to drive, or they can't afford to drive.
Or they can't, and all of those people, or they can't cycle. A lot of people can't cycle.
They can't cycle, yeah. And all of those people, they're not, you know, burdens on society, and they're not out yeah, of, good point. You know, they're very car-centric.
Stay there, listen, Neil and Mary, listen to David. I don't know whether you work in an ad agency, do you, Dahi?
I still do. I used to be involved with the agency that produced like that ad in question. I've nothing bad to say about them, but just more so from the perspective
yeah,
of
please.
What the intended effect of these kind of things is. And while it's unfortunate that people are obsessed, and I can guarantee that's never the intention.
Yeah.
Rather, it's specifically aimed at a demographic which I am a part of, and I think this conversation happening is going to amplify the message of that campaign to that specific demographic, which I think someone alluded to earlier on, is like, there is a problem with drug and drink driving in the country. And anybody knows that. Anybody, go to any local regional town and tell me there's not lads hopping in the car and driving home after whatever have you. So I think that the people being upset is always unfortunate. It's never an intended consequence. But what I do know is that the intention would have been to target a specific problem demographic rather than try to solve all of the road safety issues in one single ad, which is very tough.
Yeah, which is very... Okay, well that's straightforward. I used to work in an ad agency. I have a bit of an idea of when you're trying to focus. But David, I just wonder, in this day and age, do ad agencies, it didn't happen on my day, but do ad agencies proof ads? Now, I don't mean proofread or watch for inconsistencies or colour grading or whatever, or spelling mistakes. But do they bring a focus group in and say, have a look at this ad, let us know what you think. And especially we want to find out, does it upset anybody? If so, why? We can still proceed with the ad. But does it upset anybody? And if so, why? In other words, are ads proofed in that way, in this world that we now live in?
Not in the way of, are we going to measure, is this going to upset people? I don't think there's a gauge.
Yeah, okay, right.
There might be in the future, but the research and the focus grouping and the strategy is done to collect insights, i.e. this ad, I can't speak, I'm not speaking factually, I'm generalising, but I'm saying they would have came up with this as a good idea off the back of a hell of a load of insights and data that suggested this demographic is causing problems.
So I'm gonna make a leap from what you're saying, David. Hopefully it's sequential. Neil, the RSA are saying, when we interview young people...
First, could I just respond to that very quickly, what he said there? Just first of all, there's no issue with the actors. I actually think the actors are very good in it. But the idea, I'm not upset. It's about the remit of the Road Safety Authority of Ireland. And their remit is to educate and promote road safety. And the suggestion that some of us are not thinking that drug or drunk driving is serious is quite bizarre, because I've dedicated 8 years of my life to road safety since my sister's death. And I would say that the intention, the intention might be good, but it's not a trivial matter.
No, but I'm the sequence I was going to go along from what...
Oh, yeah, plus the proofing, yeah.
No,
yeah,
not from what David was saying is... David is saying, my understanding is that the RSA do focus groups, and they say to young people, young men, what's the big worry you'd have about being caught drunk and driving or whatever? And they all say, losing my licence, losing my independence. Yeah. So therefore, they focus on that, and they try and do it in a humorous way. That's...
Well, as I said earlier, it's not humorous in terms of what the reality is. And I think it's sad that the focus is on what we would consider minor inconveniences. It's something that goes back to the entitlement culture, where it comes to cars and drivers. is that, like, the worst thing in the world is to lose your license. And yeah, it should be. But the worst thing is to actually go out and commit the crime. Like most people who are done for drink and drug driving, they're not just, I'm not condoning it in any way, but they're not just a slightly bit over the limit. They're normally massively over the limit. So I think that, you know, why not target the behaviours as well? Like, as I said, there isn't anything education in that advert. I can't see.
Got to take another break. Back after this, Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Derek, good afternoon. Derek, you were at Electric Picnic and you came across the...
Correct, Joe.
Yeah, tell us about the RSA. Tent.
Yeah, John, I suppose it's just a compliment, I suppose.
Yeah.
In the sense that, I mean, you hear the ad campaign, Joe, regarding, lose your independence if you lose your license and stuff like that. So I was at in the Electric Picnic, on Friday.
Okay.
Now, bear in mind, I had to leave there early on Saturday, so I was, aware of that, I needed to start to keep myself in shape for the drive home, Dublin City.
Well done.
So we were going, myself and my wife were going down to get a cup of coffee or whatever before the drive, and then I noticed this booth where you could go in and actually test yourself to see where you were up. And that was applied by the RSA, and I just thought it was a really good incentive, just for people to check if they weren't at all worried. It takes the worry out of the drive, Joe, as well.
I'd love, can they be bought cheaply over in a supermarket or a shop that people would use them regularly?
It'd be absolutely perfect.
Or a pub.
Yeah, you can buy them online or whatever,
Okay, yeah.
But I don't know how accurate they are, Joe. It was a non-judgmental service that was provided by a volunteer standing there. Showed you what to do, you blew into it, gave you a reading, and off you went. If you were over the limit, Joe, you decided to drive, that's off your own back, But I just thought, for anybody who was responsible or anything, needed to go early for whatever reason, if you wanted to hang around, if you were, slightly over the limit, Joe, I just thought it was a very good day with the RSA, so.
Here, well said.
So good on them.
Safe travelling, Derek, thanks indeed. Let me go to Patrick King. You heard that the Garda traffic watch phone number is gone.
Yes.
Why?
I don't know why.
Road debts are going up, and they're now telling you if you see someone weaving and bobbing on a road.
Exactly.
What would they say to you now? You can dial 999.
You can't do that while you're driving along behind some guy who's weaving along.
Have hands free.
You've got to wait until you get home and start filling in an online form.
That's what I'm saying. If you were in the car, you could either pull over and use your mobile or use your hands free, which you're allowed to do, and especially if you've got voice activation. But the Garda traffic phone line is gone.
Yes. Yes, it was in use up until recently, I gather. But I phoned it this morning. I think your own people did the same.
Well, can we ring it now? Let's ring it now.
Oh, of course. Yes.
Does anyone know what the number is?
1890 2058 05.
1890. Well done.
Yeah.
20. Please ring 999 or 112.
Okay, we ring that again,
if
and we get it from the top.
If the incident is a non-emergency incident, please follow the traffic watch instructions. Non-emergency incidents. On the Garda.ie website. Thank you.
Secure websites. Do that again, Shane. Would you mind, Shane? This is you're driving along the motorway and you see a dope weaving hither and thither and yon, or maybe overtaking recklessly.
If you wish to report an emergency traffic watch incident, please ring 999 or 112. If the incident is a non-emergency incident, please follow the traffic watch instructions, non-emergency incidents, on the Garda.ie website. Thank you.
How do you determine whether it's an emergency or not? The last thing you want to be doing in the
world... You're trying to avoid
999, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. I've only used it once ever.
What did you say to them?
It was in relation to a suspected driving under the influence, I reported it, and no, I didn't get any follow-up, but I'm hopeful that the vehicle was stopped, further on the road, it's discontinued.
Especially now, given the world we live in, I go back to the mobile phones and the technology that's changing by the day, it's improving by the day. surely if someone phoned in and say, I saw a fella and he's just coming out of Loughlin Sound and he's all over. He could be unwell. He's all over the gaff now. He's back on his lane again. His reg number is blah, 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 blah. And he's in a... And it, the system should be, in this AI world we live in, the system should be able to say, well, there is actually a Garda doing a checkpoint down in the Glen of the Downs. We automatically give him the number or her the number. Like, we live in these incredibly advanced technological times. I don't know why we're going backwards. First of all, by saying, oh, you have to drive home, get out your laptop, go into the Garda, then go into another link, fill out a form, and then by the time... Anyway. Okay.
You need to do it while the incident is live. It has to be done while the incident is still live. There's no point hours afterwards. It's...
Okay. Well, it's a public service announcement. The Garda's traffic watch phone number, which we dial. We'll dial again. This is what happens when you dial the Garda's traffic watch phone number. What do you get an answer? Yes, sometimes you get an answer, and they say, thank you for ringing us, but you're not going anywhere, and we're not going anywhere.
Okay. If you wish to report an emergency traffic watch incident, please ring 999 or 112. Yeah. If the incident is a non-emergency incident, please follow the traffic watch instructions.
Well, that's the end.
Non-emergency incident.
That is the end of traffic watch, Patrick. That is the end of that. Let's face it. That is the end of it. The Guardian now is basically saying it was only a gimmick all along. They're saying now go home, go online, fill out a form. People are sick of filling out forms, and it was only a gimmick. It's gone.
Well, that brings its own difficulties. If you start to fill out the form, you're going to have to record the townland where the incident occurred. You're going to have the time, the registration number, and even still, you don't know who was driving the vehicle.
Yeah,
I mean the only person.
Very good point.
I'm
near exit 16. I'm heading south. Yeah. The next town is Newtown, Mount Kennedy, or whatever. Yeah, very good point, Patrick. But anyway, it's gone. The Garda got rid of it, and that's the end of that. Okay, go to Mina Machagafarik. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
By the way, David Lamb has been back on. David was the man, the musician, who had saved €5,000 after, by working, by the way. So that's 10 grand before you come out with 5 grand, generally for people. And to buy this very unusual a flute called, I think it was a Russell Rouser or whatever, it's not written here. And he said at the end, he's a GoFundMe page. He said, I'm a bit embarrassed telling you about it, but he's really stuck. And he's just been back on to say, to thank people for giving to his GoFundMe page, because it's increased dramatically in the last half hour. And the GoFundMe page is GoFundMe Flute Needed, Flute Needed. David Lamb is his name. But David, I say to you, the reason why people are relating is because you came across as such a decent individual, and you didn't berate anyone, you didn't label anybody. You were just deeply disappointed that you were your €5,000 was robbed out of your pocket when you were going to meet this musician from England who was selling it. But anyway, it's called GoFundMe Flute Needed. And as I say, I don't know the ins and outs of every GoFundMe page. People made their judgment themselves about David. So hopefully, by tomorrow, we'll have enough to buy that flute back again. OK, Joe at RT.ie. Tommy O'Sullivan was on sound, broadcast coordinator. Shane Galvin, producer, Brenda Donoghue. And Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Home in on end-of-season savings on bedding, curtains, wallpapers and more. In-store and online at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.